You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Warriors Off Court, the San Francisco Chronicles NBA podcast. I'm your host, Warriors beat writer Connor Letourneau, and I'm joined today by assistant sports editor Janie Hugh and Golden State forward Kevon Looney.
So Janie, it's good to be back on the pod. Obviously we didn't end up doing it last week, or I should say we didn't end up posting the pod last week. For full disclosure for our listeners, we did a full podcast. We had it good to go. We felt great about it. I think it was one of our better podcasts. But then, you know, this thing happens where in his first game back, Steph Curry, obviously coming back from that tweaked right ankle, ends up hurting his left knee and is now out at least 3 weeks, looking like he's going to miss the first round of the playoffs. And unfortunately, much of the podcast had to do with his return from the ankle injury, what that meant for the team, all this great analysis, and it was pretty moot by the time we were about to get it up on the internet. So,
let me tell you, apologies to the listener. Yeah, apologies there. Let me tell you, that was a rough day. We had the Giants losing Madison Bumgarner in the morning, and then the evening ending with the Warriors losing Stephen Curry again. So for not just Warriors fans, Bay Area fans, and newspaper media folks, it was a rough one.
It was a day that will probably live in Bay Area sports infamy for a while. I think it could go down as one of the worst days in Bay Area sports history, depending on what happens going forward. I mean, if Steph is out for a while, and hypothetically, if the Warriors weren't able to stick around long enough for Steph to come back, I think that's a date everyone would look at as not only a turning point in the season, but, you know, a turning point in this franchise, because I can only imagine the repercussions that would happen in that scenario. But, you know, that's a huge what if. That's a huge hypothetical.
Absolutely. And let's not forget, first of all, Curry's been through this before. Warriors fans have been through this before. And if anything, this season has shown that, you know, you never know which all-star is going to be out.
Yeah, and I said this a million times, but there's no team in the NBA right now, probably recent NBA history, that is better equipped for this type of adversity. And I don't think there's a better player, honestly, who's better equipped to handle this type of thing than Steph. Like you mentioned, he's dealt with this before. He has shown in the past that he can come back from an injury and be operating at a high level in his first game or two back. So, you know, best case scenario for this team, they're able to get through. The reality is the rest of this regular season doesn't really matter because they already are essentially locked into that number two seed. So it's just a matter of getting guys healthy the rest of this regular season and then getting through that first round and getting Steph back for a potential Western Conference semis. And, you know, tonight's kind of, you know, a big night because Durant is supposed to come back from that rib injury that he's missed the past six games with. Draymond's supposed to come back from flu-like symptoms, and then which he missed two games with. He missed a game before that with a pelvic contusion. So they're finally starting to get back at full strength. And the interesting thing to me going forward is, you know, what are they going to look like without Steph? Are they going to look like that team that they were in December when Steph missed 11 games. They were a pretty darn good team. They went 9-2, beat some really good teams in that stretch. Kevin Durant was absolutely dominant during stretches there. And the reality is when you're missing a guy like Steph Curry, you have to overhaul your approach. You know, their blueprint in December with Steph out was pretty much slow down the tempo, really rely on your defense, because the reality is you're not going to be able to make up what Steph does offensively, and then roll your offense through Kevin Durant, who's a four-time NBA scoring champion, one of the most elite scorers in NBA history. You know, let him do a little bit more ISO, let him dig into his bag of tricks and push the limits of his, you know, creativity, which is not a bad option. So that's what you're
not at all.
That's what you're going to see going forward into the playoffs.
Right. And let's not forget during that stretch that those 11 games that Curry missed, we were having conversations on this podcast about Kevin Durant being a potential defensive player of the year candidate. So he, not only was he able to turn it up a notch offensively, but defensively as well.
Yeah, there in 10 of those 11 games, he had multiple blocks. He had 10 straight games with multiple blocks, which before that he had never had more than six. And that was right at the height, like you mentioned, of the conversation of can Kevin Durant be Defensive Player of the Year. At that time, he was playing at a Defensive Player of the Year level. I don't think that he has done enough since then to still be in that conversation. I think he might have an outside shot at all-defensive team. But it's looking like Utah's Rudy Gobert, even though he's missed some time, is probably going to be Defensive Player of the Year. What he's done since coming back from his own injury and what Utah's been able to do with him leading the pack defensively, I think is enough to warrant, you know, being the front runner in that conversation. But the interesting thing to me about this is, you know, yes, the Warriors can be an elite team without Steph. And I honestly think that you can make the argument that even if Steph missed more time than the first round, that they could or should be considered the favorite still. But, you know, whoever you face in that first round is going to be a tough matchup. I mean, we obviously have no idea who it's going to be because the bottom of that Western Conference is so bunched right now. But you could face, you know, a Utah team that last I had checked was like 23-4 in their past 27 games. You could face a New Orleans team that's playing great basketball without DeMarcus Cousins. You could play a San Antonio team that, you know, is one of the most consistent teams in the past two decades. And obviously there's still an outside chance that Kawhi Leonard could come back. You could face a Minnesota team with a healthy Jimmy Butler, which, you know, that core is as good as any core in the league outside of maybe Golden State when they're healthy. And then you have Oklahoma City, which has obviously already beaten the Warriors twice this season and has the most star power in this league outside of the Warriors. So I'm really
not to mention a little long running ish feud. There's still some Durant leftovers there.
Oh yeah. I mean, how interesting would it be hypothetically if you have Durant going back to OKC in the first round as the de facto face of the franchise because Steph is out. I mean, that'll be a rabid environment. Oklahoma City is one of the best environments in the league regardless. And with that, with the high stakes of the playoffs, with the Durant history, I mean, that if you're a fan of the NBA, you might be hoping for that one.
Exactly. But Connor, you're exactly right. The Western Conference, the way that it's shaken out now, you've got those 6-7 teams bunched in the, let's say, the 4th through 10th spot. So we really don't have any idea how that's going to play out. There's only, you know, let's see, 4 games separating them. It could still swing so many different ways. Oklahoma City, we just talked about all of the other intangibles that go with that matchup. San Antonio, it's
this, no matter what, they still have the second best home record in the West after Houston. You know, despite all of their internal troubles seemingly with Kawhi Leonard. It's a great time to be a basketball fan, I think, and sit back and watch to see how it all unfolds.
Yeah, and you know, it's kind of interesting from a beat writer perspective over the next couple weeks until the playoffs, because you know I'm going out to these games every other day, and I'm sitting there, and the reality is I know these games don't matter. So the question is, you know, what do you write when you know the game you're covering doesn't actually matter? And the reality is I find myself writing a lot about, you know, very little about the actual games themselves, and writing about, okay, well, you know, Steph and, you know, or, you know, doing kind of short injury updates and focusing more on the health aspect, because that's what the most important thing is about these games going forward, is making sure, okay, KD's where he wants to be. He's looking like the KD of old. Draymond is a two-way enforcer the way you've come to expect him to be. And then Clay, who's going to be out a little bit longer, looks like he could probably come back maybe as soon as Sunday, but probably sometime next week, and that he's finding a rhythm. But I actually think that it's helpful that the Warriors have had, you know, extended time this season without Steph already. They already have a really good understanding of what they need to look like with him out, you know, what works for them, and in terms of, you know, how they change their offense, how all the dynamics shift both offensively and defensively. And I think that's one issue that you've seen in the past couple of weeks with so many guys out, is like, of course, you know, you're not going to be as good when you're losing your four best players, four all-stars, or four leading scorers. But I think another thing that's hurt them is they didn't know how to adjust, because they've never had to deal with something like that. Okay, who should be our go-to guy now? Who should we roll our offense through? You know, who should everything be predicated around? So there was a lot of uncertainty, you could tell when they're out on that court, of just them
right,
not really knowing what to do, which is completely understandable. And that, I think that's part of why they've lost as many games as they have. You know, it's of course you have nothing to really go off of when you're down that many guys. But the one, I guess, positive, or there's a couple positives that you can glean from all these recent absences. One, obviously, is that it's more rest for your core guys right before you get into the games that matter. And the other is that it was an extended chance for guys, role players, to step up, role players to get confidence. And as we know, you know, come the playoffs, every single year, there are teams that win the championship, they have role players come up in big moments. You know, Steve Kerr obviously had that in his career with a couple of times with Chicago, hitting big shots in playoff games. Patrick McCaw came up big for them last year a couple times.
Right.
You know, Ian Clark, Mo Spates, in recent years, you know, each of those guys have had their moments. So for the Warriors to do what they want to do come May and June, they're going to need guys like Nick Young, Jordan Bell, Quinn Cook, Kevon Looney to feel emboldened enough to take shots when they need to and to make plays that can help decide games. And so it's been good from that standpoint. Who during this recent stretch has impressed you? Who stood out to you that, you know, a guy that you didn't necessarily expect a ton from that impressed you with all these guys out?
I think it has to be Quinn Cook. I mean, this is a guy we've heard people talk about, hey, he's a legitimate NBA player. He goes way back with Kevin Durant, but just to see him step in, this is something that actually we talked about in our last podcast that wasn't posted, is just that there's such a difference in mentality for let's say an NBA player when you know you're going to have a longer leash and you can kind of settle into your game, right? You're not going to get the quick hook from the coach when you make a mistake or a turnover and whatnot. And Quinn Cook coming in with Steph out, I think has just has shown that he belongs in the league. He's going to be a solid backup. There was a lot of talk about whether or not Quinn Cook was going to make the Warriors playoff roster. Regardless of that, he's played himself onto a team for next season on a guaranteed contract.
Right. No, I mean, he's obviously who you have to start that conversation with. He's been not only surprisingly good, but he's been essential with all these guys out. He's shown that he's not only an NBA player, but he's a better shooter and a better scorer than most players in this league. I mean, he's really elite if given up the opportunity. He's a phenomenal three-point shooter. Going back to his days at Duke, he's shot well over 35% throughout his career. And now he's finally getting the opportunity to show that, which has been cool. And you know, the flip side of that, which I know we've talked about before, is they're going to have to cut someone. You know, they're going to have to waive someone to free up that playoff spot. And with Steph out now, you know, there was already a lot of speculation about them needing to find a playoff spot for Quinn. Now with Steph out for at least the first round, I don't even think it's a question. I don't even think it's a debate at this point. He has to be on that playoff.
Certainly, because
from a need standpoint,
absolutely. Sean Livingston can't play those extended minutes at this stage of his career. They're going to need another point guard.
Yeah, I mean, they need at least two point guards in that first round. And the reality is, he's going to have already started, you know, several weeks before, and he's going to have a rhythm with those other three all-stars. So you don't want to mess with that. So the question is, you know, who do they waive? And barring an injury to someone, another injury to someone down the stretch of this regular season, it's got to be Omri Caspi, which is unfortunate for him because, you know, he's shown that he can be an asset for this team. He's obviously a great rim cutter. He had a really nice December for them, but he's had a lot of minor injury setbacks that have made it really difficult for him to find a rhythm and to become a regular part of this rotation. And now,
right,
at a really critical point in the season, he's injured again. He's got a right ankle sprain where he's missed a handful of games, and they just announced he's going to miss tonight's game as well. So it's just kind of unfortunate for him, you know, and I know it's bothering him on a personal level. It's got to be an awkward situation when obviously the team's not necessarily talking to him about it because they don't have to make a decision officially about this until April 10th. There's no need to talk to him about it until then. But he reads what's being written. He has Twitter. You know, he knows what's going on. He's a smart guy.
Well,
and
let's not forget that you actually walked up to him in practice one day and asked him, no?
Yeah, we've talked about it. And I was the person who asked him flat out about it in a group setting.
You put your flak jacket on for that?
My what jacket?
No, like your battle gear on, you know, for
that. I mean, the thing is, Omri's a really nice guy, and he's, you know, he's done everything right since he's been here. And I think when you're in a position as a reporter where you have to report things like this, I think, I'm not talking about Omri specifically, but players can kind of see you writing these things and think, why is this guy going after me? Why does this guy want me to lose my job? It's not that I want Omri kicked off this team at all. I have no investment at all. I have no bias one way or the other. I just am looking at it objectively, and that's really the only thing that makes sense at this point. You can't, because of a need standpoint and a financial standpoint, it doesn't make sense to cut a guy like a Patrick McCaw or a Nick Young or Jordan Bell. You know, those names have been floated around to me in emails and that sort of thing. And, you know, none of those make sense. So it's just kind of an unfortunate situation for Omer.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can say the old adage that, you know, there's never a good time for injuries, but when you're in his position, there are worse times. And it just seems like every time, you know, an opportunity has kind of opened up, he's gone down too as well.
Yeah, and, you know, kind of going back to my original question, there were, you know, Quinn Cook was not the only guy that stepped up in the past couple of weeks with all these guys out. Another one who's really impressed is Kevon Looney, who, as we all know, is a guy who was really injured, had a serious hip problem his first two seasons in the league, missed a lot of time. And this is really his first season where he's been healthy and been able to get into a groove. And he's been in and out of the rotation all season, but with all these guys out, he's gotten an extended run. I think he's leapfrogged Jordan Bell on the depth chart, and he's shown that he can be a really versatile defender, which is going to be really important come the playoffs, especially, you know, if they get to those Western Conference Finals against a Houston, you know, and he's a guy who could be a real asset against the Rockets, guarding a guy like Clint Capella and then switching off ball screens to pick up, you know, James Harden or Chris Paul. He can do all that, which is could be really critical down the line. And I actually got the chance to sit down with him after shoot around today, and we had a nice conversation about his progress over the past year and everything that's gone into reaching this moment. And, you know, here's our conversation.
So you've obviously been playing pretty well, but what's been working for you the past couple of weeks with all these guys up?
Just getting more aggressive, taking my jump shot a little bit more, attacking open lanes for that opportunity, and really opening up my game for them. The team's locked in the defense. That's something without a lot of our guys out, we have not had a lot of scoring, so defense is something that we have to do to stay in the game. So as a team, as a group, we've been kind of focusing on that.
I think maybe your most important skill this season, really as the league trends to more small ball versatile lineups, has been your defensive versatility. A lot of people have talked hypothetically, you know, if you guys face Houston and in the Western Conference Finals or something, you could be a guy who's really key because you're one of the few guys who can switch on and guard their guards off screens. How important to you is the ability to guard multiple positions?
That's really important to me because that's the way for me to get on the floor. With the team having so much talent, so much depth at the big man, each of us have something that we're pretty good at, so I wanted to lock in on that. Being able to switch out on the guards, be able to make that back that way. Something I focus in on the summertime, and prepared up for me this season.
Yeah, when did you really start focusing on? Was it just this past summer that became kind of a priority for you?
Yes, I've been always solid on defense, but this summer I decided to be lighter. I want to be able to switch out and be able to make an impact that way. Playing at UCLA, there's a lot of guards up there. I've been playing with them, trying to hold them and pick and roll and stuff like that. So it was a good test for me, and coming into training camp, I feel good about it. And Steve used me that way for the season, so I paid off.
Steve Kerr is probably your biggest fan. Throughout the season, even when you're not playing that much, he always goes out of his way to speak highly of you. Seems like he really respects your diligence, what you did this past summer. How much has that meant to you as a guy who has sporadic playing time at times, knowing that your coach really, you know, believes in you?
It gives me great confidence. Steve's a great coach. He's been a great NBA player. GM, he had his hand in a lot of things in the NBA, so him not having confidence in him gives me a lot of confidence, and knowing that your coach trusts you out there on the floor gives you that extra boost. So having Steve come talk to me and just communicate with me, that's been a big help this season.
He's been in your position in his playing career where he was coming off the bench, didn't know necessarily how much he was going to play. Is this something he's talked to you about much?
Yes, actually, yeah. Last year, my rookie year, he always tells me about how NBA is a weird thing where you to not fight for 5 games. You might start the 5 games, you might play a game. He told me about a story when he was in Oklahoma State, but somebody got hurt. He hadn't played the whole season. And if somebody got hurt, he ended up with a start the rest of the year. So NBA, a lot of things happen. You always got to be ready and be professional. That's part of the job.
Obviously, you didn't have your third year, your next year picked up earlier this season. But has that been something that's on your mind, even in the back of your mind? Like, hey, you know, if I had a string of good games, you know, I can put myself in a position to come back next season or get a, you know, multi-year deal with another team. Is that something you think about at all?
Not as much. I really at the same moment. In the beginning of the season, I thought about it just because not knowing if I'm going to actually play or how things will turn out. But as the season went on, I just kind of put that in the back of my mind, so I'm going to focus on the season and playing well and improving myself. The first 2 years was kind of rough for me with injuries and how things shook out, but I knew this year was going to be a better year for me just because of my body, and I just had more confidence in myself, so I try to let that deal with it. Like, you know, just let it play out, and when the summertime comes, hopefully I did enough work for something good for me.
Yeah, when something like that happens, your option doesn't get picked up. Is the fear that, okay, since I'm not necessarily, you know, going to be around next season, am I not going to be in their plans for this season? Is that the fear of I'm not going to play anymore and I'm not even going to get a chance to prove myself anymore?
Yes, when it first happened, that was kind of a fear, something that I was worried about. I mean, we got a lot of depth at the big position, so it could have been easy just to bear me on the bench and I wouldn't have had a chance to really prove myself. But Steve always, he told me that your opportunity is going to come. If you don't play the first 5 games, when I put you out there, just show everybody what you can do and make it time to play you. And it's something that stuck in my mind throughout the whole season. So when he told me that my opportunity is going to come at some point, it gave me confidence just to stay ready and be ready when you get out there and make sure you show you what you can do.
How nice is it just to be healthy? I mean, this is your first year where you've legitimately been healthy for an entire season. How has that felt, just being able to play every night if you can?
It's been great. Not having to worry about nagging injuries, not having to worry about getting on the court, avoid certain movements. Just going out there knowing that your body's going to be able to hold up. It's been a very confidence boost for me. And it's been great. After all the hard work I put in the summer and all the surgeries and all, it feels like it's actually paying off, and I did it for a reason. It was just my bad luck kind of ran out.
Yeah, is that going to be something you kind of keep at the front of your mind going into the ensuing offseason? You know, because you can really feel the rewards that you're reaping from last summer still.
Yeah, definitely. Going into summer, this is going to be last year. My summer was short just because of injuries a little bit. So I had a short summer to work on my body, work on my game. So this summer, we get a full summer, and I'm really excited about that. The leap I took last year, I think I could take even a bigger leap. So I'm really excited about the summertime, being able to work on my body, work on my game, and try to keep getting better.
Did last summer feel kind of like a make-or-break summer for you? Did it feel like your career was kind of at a crossroads just because of the injuries that you really needed to get the most out of that summer to keep your career back on track?
Yeah, definitely. After having an injury at the end of the season last year, and then coming into the summer league, I knew I wasn't quite where I wanted to be, but I thought I was going to be able to have a better summer league. And going in there, I had an allergic reaction, another kind of small injury, and it kind of was devastating for me and my confidence. And that was supposed to be the time I could get to show myself, show everybody what I could do, how much I got better. So it had to go kind of bad, and everybody was doubting if I could even be in the NBA anymore. I knew it was time to work. Kind of really prove myself, but if it didn't work this time, it was probably going to be it for me. So I locked in, I still had confidence in what I could do as a player, and everybody around me had confidence in what I could do, so I put in the work and it's been paying off.
You have kind of you're obviously very versatile defensively, but you definitely have some old school aspects to your game, especially offensively. Are there any guys from previous eras that you've kind of patterned yourself after or followed growing up?
Not really. I was a fan of Kobe just like everybody else. But as I got older, and especially when I came to the NBA, I watched a lot of guys like LaMarcus Aldridge, D. West,
them guys playing a traditional four spot, hit the 15 footer, that's something that I knew I could be able to do. That's how I kind of used me a little bit in college. So them is the two guys I really watch a lot. And, Kevin Love, he was in Minnesota. He's he didn't shoot as many threes, so he was UCLA. So he was a guy I watched too. So those are some of the guys, I guess, kind of still play old school basketball and some guys I watch.
Being a Milwaukee guy, has it kind of been fun for you to see what's happening with the Bucks? It seems like they're heading in the right direction. Obviously, they have a superstar to build around in Giannis. And that's something they've really lacked for a long time, right, is that guy to really build around. How fun has that been for you to watch from afar?
It's been great. They're bringing a lot of excitement to the city of Milwaukee. When I go back in the summertime, you see the Bucks everywhere. They're in the community. Fans love them. They love Giannis. They love Jabari. They love the team. They got the new arena coming. So the Bucks are doing great things for the city of Milwaukee. Me being growing up there, I always look at the team, look what they're doing for the community. So it's really been fun to see the city change and grow and do to part of the Bucks.
Were you a Bucks fan?
Yeah, I was a Bucks fan. I watched, and when I came here to see Andrew Bogut, that's somebody I watched growing up my whole life. So it was cool to see him. Brandon Jennings is back with the Bucks. Watching him growing up, Michael Redd, Zaza was there when I was. So it was. I was a Bucks fan. I watched closely. He went in the playoffs a lot, but the time he did go to the playoffs was a lot of excitement.
Obviously, Nick Young's your cousin, right?
Right, yeah.
First cousin,
yes.
And, you know, what's it been like this season, you know, being able to spend an entire year with him? And I'm sure you've gotten a lot of quality time with him.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun because growing up, he grew up in California. I grew up in Milwaukee, so I didn't even see him much. When he comes to Milwaukee, the NBA team, he would give a stick and it would cost him a little bit. But really, getting out here, just coming here, getting to really know him, talk to him, and just build a better relationship has been a lot of fun. He's a great guy, a lot of fun on the court and off the court. So just having him around has been a lot of good work.
Yeah, have you been able to spend a lot of free time with him? And
We spend a lot of time on the road or at home. You know, as a team, we always are all together all the time. So me, the young guys, everybody's together. Getting to know him has been great.
You guys personality wise seem a bit different. He's obviously flashy. You seem a little bit more low key.
Yeah.
Is it just because of where you guys grew up, or you know, different sides of the family? What do you attribute that to?
I think it's just the way we grew up. This is the way we grew up. He's similar to my mom. My mom would be more flashy, outspoken, and a lot more fun. So I guess I became obviously my mom more like my dad. So so that's the different sides. This is where we grew up. Milwaukee's a lot different than LA.
Yeah.
He dressed a lot cooler than I do. So that's we don't dress like that in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
So.
Has he helped you with your style a little bit?
A little bit. I just watched what he wears. No, we both got with Adidas. So yeah. I see what he wears. I might steal a couple of things. I don't be as flashy as him, but I might try to incorporate it to my style.
Cool, man. Thanks, Kevon.
Yeah, no problem.
Thanks, man.
This show is part of the San Francisco Chronicle Podcast Network. Our theme music is Thank You for Playing by Ryan Little, courtesy of the Free Music Archive. The show is produced by me and Fernando Diaz. For more Warriors coverage, you can follow us on Twitter at @Con_Cron and @Janie_Hugh. Check out all of our coverage at sfchronicle.com. Also, follow us on iTunes, and if you have some time, give us some feedback.